Previously on the West Wing.
Excellent.
And you should probably put in at the start a disclaimer, maybe even this, what I'm saying now, which is that I'm really sorry for what you're about to listen to, but it is literally me getting on my high horse about what wrestling is, what it's become, what it should be, where it's going wrong, and why I have stopped watching it since WrestleMania 33.
It's WrestlePod, the Troopany show, with your host, James Troopany.
Hello and welcome to the Troopany Show. My name is James Troopany. This is my show and you're listening to us on the WrestleTalk Podcast Network, which you can find on iTunes and SoundCloud and wherever you get your podcast from by searching WrestleTalk in the search bar there. And you can also find us on WrestlePlus.com for $4.99 a month, which you can hear an advert for now.
WrestlePlus.com is the brand new home of incredible online wrestling content, featuring uncensored shoot interview classics, full series of WrestleTalk TV and British Wrestling Weekly, exclusive documentaries, British wrestling's biggest names before they were stars, an incredible podcast collection, up to 90% off merchandise offers, and the brand new Power Slammed e-magazine forwarded by Finn Martin himself. WrestlePlus has thousands of hours of content with new and exclusive releases added regularly. You can join today for the stupidly low price of just £4.99 a month. Wrestle Plus, because this is wrestling.
And my guest today on the Troopany Show is my former co-host and former Wrestle Talk TV presenter and Daily Squash presenter and former editor of WrestleTalk.tv and the man that got me started in the podcast business in the first place. Will you please welcome back Mr. Ben Spindler? How are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm a bit disappointed that there's not like an audience to clap me. No, please welcome. Well, who are you talking to? I hope that people listen to this, whether they're on their way to work, they're on the toilet, wherever they are, they're clapping in some way. That would be a nice thing.
Nice.
They're probably just going, oh, who the hell's this guy? I've forgotten.
Should be like the big reveal. We should have given you like music and stuff.
Yeah, I expected a drum roll and all kinds, but
oh,
didn't happen.
I'm sorry, man. I'll edit that in afterwards. but you've been away from the wrestling journalism world for a while now, and you've come back for a chat. So what are you doing with wrestling at the moment?
I'm doing nothing with wrestling, James. I'm doing not a thing. I stopped doing the squash. When was it? About September last year, I think.
I was just looking at my Skype, and the last time I talked to you was October, and I was a guest on the squash then. So maybe a little
right
before that, yeah.
That's a bit later than I thought. Okay, so I did I was doing the squash up to October, and that was fine. But I think what had happened, James, is I got to the point where I realised I had said, at that point at least, everything I could possibly want to say about wrestling. I'd done personally 400 episodes of the Daily Squash, possibly a little bit more. I think me and you did 12 of this show. 12
yes.
episodes of this show, which is an hour long. Me and Gavin did about 50 episodes of the Attitude Era show, which is an hour each. I did the Raw Review show for a year, which is another hour each one of those podcasts. I think in total, you know, I'm looking at around about 600 podcasts.
It's about 1,000 hours, aren't you? About 1,000 hours.
So an awful lot. And then, of course, on top of that, WrestleTalk TV. And then also just conversing generally with people on Twitter and writing stuff for the website and goodness knows what else. And I just thought, you know what? I don't think I can say anything more about wrestling anymore. And not only that, but I don't know if this is the same for you, James, but when I'm talking about wrestling, when I was doing the podcast, I was also finding that I was learning more about what I thought about it.
Yes.
So I was forming an opinion as I was going on. And even when I was arguing with someone like Paul Taylor, for example, even that was informing slowly my own viewpoint, and that I found exciting. But it got to a point where I wasn't doing that anymore. I was just talking, and I knew I didn't feel like I was learning anymore about what I thought and my own thoughts about wrestling and my own philosophy about wrestling, and so it became less exciting for me. So I stopped doing the Daily Squash, and there were some other things in my personal life, you know, some things I had to prioritize over wrestling, which, you know, I know is difficult to understand, especially from yourself, your perspective, James, given how much time you give to it. But I just, there were things that were just more important. And so, so that's why I stopped doing the squash, and obviously at the same time stopped doing the show as well. And then I did start writing a little bit just for myself, some reviews of shows and stuff, and that was fun. for a while, but I don't know what it is. I've got this thing where I put pressure on myself to just do more all the time. So I wrote one review, which is like my 4,000 or 5,000 words, and was really happy with it and really excited by it. I was like, right, okay, I'll do another one. And then I did another one. I thought, oh, that was really fun too. I'll do another one. And I kept doing it. And it got to a point where, okay, now I'm in a schedule of needing to do 2 a week. And if I don't do 2 a week, I get really annoyed with myself.
Yeah, yeah.
No. And there's no need for that. I could have just done one a week, one for one week, and then none for 3 weeks, and then 4 in 1 week, and then none for another, you know. But I can't, I'm weird like that. I need to keep a schedule almost with this stuff. So that got a little laborious for me, and I just got a bit fed up of it. And then WrestleMania happened, and that pretty much killed off my interest in watching wrestling, and I haven't gone back to watching it since. So WrestleMania is pretty much the last thing I saw of wrestling. Actually, I tell a lie, I've been to a few shows here in Bristol, because I do enjoy the local promotion here, Chaos Wrestling, yep. A lot. But other than that, I've not watched any wrestling.
I agree with you on the pressure thing, because if I remember back two and a half years ago when you first asked me to write for WrestleTalk.tv, I think I agreed to do like an article a month, and yep. That so didn't happen, because the first thing I wrote ended up being an article and a blog, and then I had a blog where I was only going to write features to start with, and then, well, now I've got a blog as well, so I'm going to have to write something for that, and I did the same thing, and I don't write as much as I used to because I don't have the time. I'm trying to space my time out, but I want it to be better, if you see what I mean. I want the stuff, I want to pack the information in, because I've learned how to be a better writer because I wrote so much. But you sometimes have to take back to understand the process of what you are doing, which sounds really ethereal and really a bit flaky artsy, but it is true, because you don't, unless you take a step back and go,
what was that word
you ethereal used? Flaky artsy,
that's the one. Flaky, oh, it was two
flaky
words.
Artsy, flaky,
I thought it
comma
was flaky artsy.
Artsy,
I was like, that's a new one by me, I don't know what that is.
No, flaky comma artsy,
I got it.
unless you step back, you don't see what you are doing, which is a non-wrestling thing. Again, we've not talked a lot about wrestling yet, but we will do, trust
we'll
us
get there.
We'll get there. We are discussing our art at the moment, it's important, but it can get hold of you. You know, and I've had an incredible year with wrestling, but I've written less about wrestling. I've done more, I've done about the same amount of podcasting as I've done in the past, but I completely understand with where you're getting at as far as burnout is concerned and overthinking this stuff to the point of you've not got any better at what you are doing because you know as much as you can know at the moment.
Yeah, that's it. I can definitely testify to what you said about how much you ended up writing, because
I was another major problem for you. I understand.
Well, you
that.
Were, because I mean, at the time I was editing the website, and like I was getting these 6,000 word a time pieces from you, and they were usually once a week, and they're usually in three parts, and they're usually about obscure subjects that I had no idea about, and I had to figure out whether or not you were actually spelling these things correctly.
And I not always
there was definitely some of the Japanese names where I was like, well, I've seen this written in Paraslam differently for about 15 times, so I've got to check out now whether this is actually the right way to spell it or not. And so yeah, I mean, there was just huge amounts, and I was, when I first started working for WrestleTalk TV, it was a long time before I ever did, and it was on the show, and it was actually quite a bit of time, well, maybe 3 or 4 months before I even did the podcast. I started off just doing the website and just editing it. I'm trying to get as much content as possible up there. And I really, you know, got into a mission where I was just like, I want to fill this site with as much as possible. And that probably would have continued, and that's when I started the podcast, and that probably would have just carried on. But that was when I then went also into helping out on the show and eventually being on the show, and that then took my focus away, and I wasn't doing as much on the website, and it wasn't writing as much. But throughout that period, you know, because I was then speaking not just to, it wasn't just that I was speaking a lot as well. It was that I was speaking to yourself, I was talking to Gavin and to Paul and to Richard Gittins back, you know, long time ago now. I was talking to Alex Shane every day for, you know, a good year. I was talking to people on the podcast like Danny Boy Collins and Rampage Brown and Vince Russo and goodness knows who else. And even the people that I wouldn't necessarily agree with, even just talking to them and listening to them, you learn things from them, but you also learn stuff yourself about what you think when you're talking to those people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it just built up such a mass of, I don't know, your instinct toward things, if that makes any sense. You watch a wrestling show and it's not like, oh, I don't know how I feel about that. It's, I know exactly how I feel about that now because I've already explored this idea before I even did it. And this sounds really highbrow, but it's ridiculous. But I think that's the thing about wrestling is that it's such a psychological, mind-blowing thing, especially when you immerse yourself into it, that you at some point you have to just take a step back. And WrestleMania made me do that.
Really did. I did have an analogy there, but we best talk about wrestling before people stop listening to us, because I had a literary analogy, and I'll come back to that in later. I'm sure I can fit it in. So what about WrestleMania made you stop wanting to watch wrestling?
I thought it was the biggest pile of crap I've ever seen in wrestling. I genuinely, and there were people annoyed at me for saying that, but I thought it was absolutely dreadful. I mean, there's so many things about it, but I think the key one for me, I tweeted it on the night, which was that WWE, for me, it showed their irresponsibility, essentially, in that their build-up and their long-term planning for that show was so atrocious, and their subsequent sort of continuation of the things that happened at WrestleMania were so poor, and they knew they were so poor, that they were willing to risk the life of a non-wrestling middle-aged man in order to distract everybody from it. And I couldn't get away from that viewpoint. I just looked at that and I thought, that's nothing to do with wrestling. That is not, like, there's no part of wrestling that needs to do that if it's done even slightly well.
Yeah.
And it's not that someone risked their life or did something dangerous, which, you know, we can talk about for ages whether or not, you know, it's right to ever do that. But the point is that it wasn't that. It's just that they had to do it. They had to do it because there was nothing else they had that was any substance or any quality whatsoever. The storylines were really poor. The build-up was atrocious. No stars were made, as has been the case at nearly every WrestleMania for the last 4 or 5 years. And again, coming out of it, the things that they had done at WrestleMania absolutely meant nothing. I said WrestleMania was the last thing I watched because it was absolutely atrocious. The last thing I watched actually was a night after WrestleMania, which I thought was actually not bad, but it was so, it had no bearing or no, it did not lead from WrestleMania in any way whatsoever. So I just thought, you know, I don't want to watch that anymore, because if they had just presented a simple story to me that made sense and had a sense of continuity to it, then if they'd have done that and not done any of the Shane stuff, which is obviously what I'm talking about, someone killed, you know, risking their life, then I would have been relatively happy. But they didn't, and they gave us that. And not only that, but God, goodness me, it was 5 hours. It just went on forever and ever and ever. And everybody was absolutely fed up by the end. I mean, there was nobody interested in either of the last two matches. And yeah, I just thought, and not only that, but then I looked at it in more detail. I thought, well, you've done the Shane thing. Earlier on in the night, you've had your multi-man ladder match where you've got all kinds of people again risking goodness knows what else. You know, their career, their health, all these things, and no one's going to remember any of that because you just had Shane McMahon throw himself off the side of a cell. Yeah, I mean, it was the essence of inefficiency in wrestling. You simply do not need to be that inefficient with people's bodies and with people's health to create good wrestling. And that's where I thought it's irresponsible of me. This is part of it, at least. It's irresponsible of me to carry on watching because I'm feeding their sense that that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you. I watched the show and I actually subscribed to the network because it was free, I'll be honest. And
I was surprised. I did see that you watched it, and I was surprised.
To be honest with you, the reason why I wanted to, because I wanted to see Nakamura's debut in NXT. Yes. That's the reason.
And that was amazing, by the way.
Yeah,
it was fantastic.
Yeah, I thought that was really, really good. And to an extent, I wanted to see what they'd done with AJ on the main roster. And that's the rub for me, is that I watch so much wrestling from so many different places around the world. And I'll be honest, as far as the main WrestleMania show, I could have more fun watching a BJW Gore Fest from Currican Hall because it's well put together with the things that they have. You know what I mean? It's using the stars they have within the company to the best effort for this tiny company that literally bleeds their heart and soul every time they put a show together. I'm not a big fan of Gorefest wrestling, but they do that really well on a budget that's, well, you know, AJ's t-shirt sales would pay for a BJW show in Currican Hall, you know. And so to me, I like wrestling that has that I feel like I'm getting somewhere with it. And I didn't feel like I was getting anywhere with WrestleMania. It just didn't. It was a bunch of people pouring on matches that and stuff happened. You know, it was like a Michael Bay action movie going on in front of me a lot of the time. And I mean, there was some good stuff, don't get me wrong. The women's title match was very good. I thought it was excellent. And AJ Jericho was good, but had the wrong result for me. But it, you know, as far as the content was concerned, it just stuff didn't move on. And I can completely see why you lost the point in it. And certainly Shane Undertaker, and I'd been saying for weeks before, I'm not being funny, but two middle-aged men hitting each other, who I know can't go that well, isn't a draw physically, aside from the danger to two people's careers. And you know that Shane's going to do something stupid because it's Shane.
Well, that's it for me. I think that was one of the biggest problems I had with it. And it was a double thing for me. It was, I have a big problem with WWE using this as the draw. Because that's what it was. The draw was Shane McMahon's going to kill himself or he's going to try. And that was the only thing that could draw you to that WrestleMania show, I'm afraid, because the rest of the card was so poorly put together. But on top of that, I was annoyed at the fans for being drawn to it. Yeah. For some reason, James, I've got a bit of faith in the idea that wrestling fans are not stupid. And what drives this home for me is, I don't know if you might follow him, but on Twitter, there's a guy called, well, he's sort of a left wing kind of, I want to call him a sort of troll, but he's not really a troll. He sort of just makes jokes at the expense of right wing media outlets and things like that. Is HRTBPS.
I've heard of him, but I don't follow him. Yes.
He made a joke about wrestling a couple of days ago, actually, before we're talking, and it was something to the effect of someone called Owen Smith had been appointed to a role in government, basically, and this guy's Twitter said, Owen Smith has been appointed to blah blah blah. It's great for Owen. He's always been in the shadow of his brother Brett Smith and his uncle and his brother-in-law Jim the Anvil Smith, and then the next tweet was. It was a Venn diagram of the number of people who follow him and are interested in left-wing politics and the number of people who are interested in wrestling. And the crossover on the Venn diagram was almost non-existent. There was literally nothing there. And it sort of, it's an obvious picture. We all know that picture, the idea that all wrestling fans are idiots, basically. And TNA are still suffering from that picture because they are struggling with their deal on pop because they can't get the advertisers to buy into their show. And even though they have some of the best ratings on that television network, it makes no difference. It was exactly the same problem they had at Destination America, exactly the same problem they had at Spike, one of the best rated shows on every single one of those networks, but simply advertisers were unwilling to buy advertising space during their program because it was seen that wrestling fans are stupid and therefore also are not high consumers. They don't buy products that cost money, basically.
Yeah.
But I have a different view of it. I believe very strongly that actually a huge amount of wrestling fans are very, very clever. So it really upsets me, actually. I get very, very angry about it. And you'll have heard me when talking to Paul Taylor on the Squash in the past about this same very thing, that it really angers me when wrestling fans live up to the stereotype.
Yep.
And them buying into that match was them living up to the stereotype, in my opinion, because there'd been no logical story, no continuity, no sort of organic build to this match. It was just it was completely manufactured the day after the February pay-per-view when they sort of unveiled exactly what they're going to be doing for WrestleMania because of all the injuries they had, and it was entirely put in on the basis and sold on the basis that Shane might kill himself, and that's just not that's just no good. That's not good in any way.
No.
I think it's bad ethically, but I think it's just bad anyway. It's bad television, bad wrestling, bad storytelling, bad everything. So, it just, that's where a big thing for me came. And you know what? There's a misconception as well that the smart fans are the ones who are relatively clever and the casual fans are not.
Yeah.
And that's completely rubbish. The casual fans are the ones who figured out that they're only going to watch it if the show's actually good. They're the clever ones.
Yeah, I agree.
The smart fans are the ones who keep coming back even though it's terrible. Well, smart is the misnomer.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's the wrong word.
Yeah, it is like, where are the marks these days? You know, it's not just a WWE thing. On last week's show, I went on a long rant about a ladder match in New Japan Pro Wrestling because to me it was bad booking for the company at hand. Sure, it was different, but you've got two major stars of your company who are risking their careers for no apparent reason because it wasn't built up to and it wasn't a story that was being told particularly well. And it's a syndrome that wrestling has, but it's amplified when the big companies do it because, you know, Shane versus Taker, like, yeah, what? You know, if you'd gone to any fan in November when they start the WrestleMania push, which goes from Survivor Series on through to Royal Rumble, you've got a rough idea of what's going to happen at Royal Rumble, and then you get the big explosion of stuff. And you said to somebody in November, Shane versus Taker, main event WrestleMania, they'd have gone, no. Because why would you want to see two middle-aged guys, one of whom is going to risk their life, which a lot of people are going to get turned off by that. You know that's what's going to happen. And I can completely understand why you felt that way. What about the wrestling in general outside of that? And I know you said you've been to some local shows. What other things have you like found to joy in pro wrestling? if there has been any joy for you to find?
No, I mean, it's interesting because the first thing is that, and again, this isn't a particularly cool thing to say, but ultimately, before I got really involved in WrestleTalk, okay, I was pretty much, one of my friends, Tom, who used to be on the squash with me occasionally in the past, he used to say to me that he was a WWE fan, not a wrestling fan, because although he followed wrestling broadly and WWE for a very long time, you know, since before I was, you know, before I watched wrestling, he's watched it for 26, 27 years. I watched it for about 22, 3, I think now.
Yeah.
And he always used to say to me he's a WWE fan because he's watched lots of other stuff. He's bought Ring of Honor DVDs and goodness knows what else, but he's always been really just interested in what's going on in WWE. And if his interest peaked in WWE, then he'd branch out into other stuff. And I'd say that broadly, before I got involved with WrestleTV, I wasn't that much different. You know, I did mostly watch WWE, and if my interest peaked with WWE, then I might go out and look at other things. And for some reason, when I became part of WrestleTalk TV, in particular British wrestling, I got very interested in. You know, in many respects, that has been something of a joy to me to see the continued, continued improvement. Not really from an in-ring perspective, because it's already top quality and has been for a number of years now. But actually now from production standpoint, from a storyline perspective, from distribution perspective, you know, if you want to now in this country, you can follow all the, like, in depth, the products of, you know, not just a handful of promotions, but a lot of different promotions have now got all their stuff up on demand.
Yeah.
And you can watch all of their stuff. You can go right back to the beginning, watch their first show, and go right the way through and watch it all as if it was some kind of series, a box set of some kind, and then follow it live onwards. And that's been a joy to behold. I still have issues with some of the things that British wrestling do because just like my interest in the past flowed from WWE, a lot of the trends you see, I think, in independent wrestling just in general, not just in British wrestling, all over the world, stems from what WWE are doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what you've got in WWE now is this culture. I mean, I looked at the PW Torch website before we spoke, and I was looking at the one of the headlines they've got is big matches announced for Monday's Raw. And the report being that WWE is at risk of falling below the 2.0 TV rating mark for the first time in goodness knows how long, probably 25 years or something stupid, they've put out all these big matches. And I looked through the list and I was like, okay, they're not big matches. Dean Ambrose versus The Miz, Rusev versus Titus O'Neil. And usually when I see that big matches label, it usually means that what WWE are going to do is they're going to whip out Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens, or you know, Nakamura's going to appear on Raw and he's going to face AJ Styles or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's that attempt to appeal to an audience based on their prior understanding of how good two wrestlers happen to be, rather than a sense that they've built up these two guys to a point where you want to see them fight each other for a prize of some kind. And, you know, and I think you'll see that across independent wrestling. I mean, Rev Pro recently promoted Zack Sabre Jr. against Kurt Angle, for example.
Yeah.
Yes, I can see why that's a dream match, but it's so reliant on anybody watching knowing that Kurt Angle has a reputation from his incredible career as being a great wrestler, although I would argue, seeing he's now semi-retired, I'm assuming he's not quite as good as he once was.
Yeah.
And Zack Sabre Jr., who, again, has got this massive reputation within wrestling circles, but does nothing for anybody outside of wrestling, or not outside of wrestling, but does nothing for anybody who thinks, who just follows that product, or doesn't follow wrestling in depth, but is interested in going to see a show. It doesn't grow your product at all, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And so, and I feel like probably indie wrestling's been doing that for a very long time, probably longer than WWE's been doing it. But now it seems like it's been validated because this is what WWE do, if you like.
Yeah, I know what you mean. The short-termism of this, and that's not the WWE's problem. Well, it is the WWE's problem. But spiking ratings just because you spike ratings isn't the issue. The issue is drawing people into a product over a longer period of time for the whole year. And, you know, I agree with you. You know, it's like, if you look at something like, I'll use the example, the biggest example of it for me in the last few years has been Okada versus Tanahashi, which is a phenomenal draw for wrestling fans. Pure wrestling fans love those matches. But the reason why it works is because they had 4 years to build that story from beginning to end, and the blow off at Wrestle Kingdom 10 this year was the best match of the seven that they had, but the wrestlers had chance to learn each other, learn from each other, develop with each other, get that placed where they need to be. But it wasn't the main event for Wrestle Kingdom 10 this year, wasn't made after the G1 climax last year. It was made 4 years ago because Gedo and Jedo booked a series of matches to build the main event to this particular moment, because that's how you make money over the long term, and that's what you should do. Because no matter who you are in wrestling history, if you want to make money, you do it over a 4-year cycle. You don't do it over next week's TV ratings.
No, totally. But I think the other problem is that they're not. It's not working. They're not spiking anything. Yeah. You know, RevPro will sell out the York Hall pretty much whoever they bring. Yeah. They sell though. I think they do like three or four shows there a year. Okay, and they sell out every time. And they didn't need to book Kurt Angle and all the money that would have cost them to bring him in, and then to have Zack Sabre Jr. lose to Angle as well in the main event, which I thought was a bit stupid. Similar to having, you know, a veteran part timer go over a full timer in WWE at WrestleMania. You know, it's essentially the same issue. You know, it's no different. It's just poor booking as each other. But it's not working because look at Raw. They don't spike any ratings. That rating's been slowly dropping and has been for 2, 3, 4 years now. And you know, I'll even take a little bit umbrage really with New Japan, James, because Wrestle Kingdom 10 drew 25,000 fans to the stadium. Okay, this year,
yeah,
that was down over 10,000 on the previous year, and the previous year before that was also about 10,000 below that. So, you know, the Wrestle Kingdoms 9, 8, and 7 drew around 35,000 fans. This one drew 25,000. Now, I'd argue they've gone too far in the long term booking, but I also think that there's a sense of, well, we're also going to chuck, you know, AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura on the show, without any real build beforehand, because it's a dream match and we're going to put it out there and people are just going to buy it because it's Styles versus Nakamura. And I don't think that worked. I don't think as a whole the card did work. And so I think there were also elements to that were short you know, it was short-termism and taking effect. So, you know, so I just saw these broader sort of themes that are going through all of wrestling. And there, as I said, there have been some great. I mean, I'm really happy to see Will Ospreay win the Super Juniors tournament, which was fantastic. But I didn't watch it, but I was happy to see him win because I think his body of work in the last year or so has been fantastic. And again, I'm talking purely from a wrestling perspective, and I still do appreciate good wrestling matches. Don't get me wrong, but I guess I'm more concerned, and maybe this is where I'm going wrong. I'm more concerned about the health of the business long term than how good it is right now or how good a specific match is right now. And I want there to be a mainstream wrestling product in 5 years' time, and at the moment, I can't see there being one.
What do you think then needs to be done to fix it? I mean, I see where you're coming from, and certainly it does worry me as well. Less so because I'm not a mainstream wrestling fan. I like less mainstream stuff, as has been well documented. But I understand the need for an industry leader. And this is the bit that we talked about this a little bit last week. I'm starting to think of the opinion of that we've been waiting so long for a secondary player to step up and challenge the WWE because that's where we will get forward motion for the industry. But I'm now concerned, or kind of, concerned's not the word, happy, but as concerned at the same time, when you've got somebody like Cody Rhodes who can see the writing on the wall of the industry, I'm not going to get any further than I have done. I'm not going to earn any more money. So I may as well leave and do the things I want to do. Is that going to be a positive? Is it going to be a negative? Is that the thing that's going to drive people away from the WWE, or is it going to be the thing that moves the rest of the industry forward? Because the gap between, say, WCW as it used to be and the WWE was tiny. The gap between WWE and Ring of Honor, or WWE and TNA, is so, so big. And for people who are casual fans, they don't understand how big that gap is. For people in wrestling who watch wrestling all the time, they see TNA as another product, and it's like, oh, it's good, and it's really well put together, and it's well presented, or what have you. Fans of the product will say that, but it is so far behind WWE on the food chain, and Ring of Honor, as good as it is still so far behind WWE on the food chain. Is there a chance that that could come up? Is it good for the business in the long-term run, or is it just bad for the business because you've got people you have hired, people you have trained, people you have invested in time in, and you don't know what to do with them, and they're leaving to go to work for somebody else?
Well, there's a lot of different questions there, James.
It is, sorry.
The first one I'd say is that you're absolutely right about WWE and TNA and WCW. I mean, in fairness, WCW was only close to WWE for the last... for about 2 or 3 years of its existence.
Yeah.
And other than that, it was actually a distinct number two, although not as distinct as TNA is, let me also add. And actually, at the end of WCW's run, it was a good, clear 3 ratings point behind WWE in terms of number of people actually watching the product. TNA is not even... you know, it's not even a fifth as big as WCW was, even at its worst ebb right now. So TNA right now is not even as fifth as big as WCW was at WCW's lowest ebb. Okay. And I don't want to be really negative about TNA because there's no point. It's like, for me, it's like when you get to an age of maturity where you realize that actually bashing the pop charts is really, really an immature thing to do. And really what you should be doing is taking tasks with the really, really bad guitar bands that are around and the things that people actually think are good but are actually atrocious. So if you're still, for example, when I was at college, if I was still bashing Westlife rather than bashing Snow Patrol, I was doing something wrong. And that's how I feel about TNA. It's kind of like there's no point bashing it. You know, I actually feel sorry for the people who work there because they're trying their best, but they're getting no traction. They're on a, you know, let's be honest, a tiny little network, where they attract 300,000 a week. And that's a lot of people for that channel. That's nothing for a nationally televised television audience. When you consider that only 3 years ago on Challenge, TNA were doing 250,000 often. a week. Mm. When you consider that, and then to see that they're now in America doing 300,000, if they're lucky, per week, you can see how little that is. So I think, I don't want to bash them too much, but they are so far behind WWE that I don't consider them to be even close. And I don't. And to be honest, I think, you know, the things I've said in the past hold this up as well. I don't think I've felt that they've been close to WWE for a very long time, and I've ever had a chance of getting close to WWE for a very long time. So I don't really see that as being a thing. I don't think there is a number two. I don't think that. And right now you've got WWE who are playing before a gradually dwindling audience of, actually, I can only imagine the hardcore people are left.
Yeah.
You know, I look at AJ Styles and the introduction of him. Now, I like what they did at the Royal Rumble, where he came in as a surprise and there was a big deal, got a big reaction. But the next day for me, it should have been, right, now we're going to do a big piece on why AJ Styles is important, where he's been, what he's done, how good he is. Not just bring him out and have him have a match and have a little backstage segment with Chris Jericho. Let's do a 5-minute video piece on AJ Styles and the fact that he's been a top line guy in one of the biggest promotions in America for the last 10 years, and then gone to Japan and been one of the top guys in the biggest promotion in Japan for the last 2 years. I'm really big up how important this guy is, rather than just doing a thing on WWE.com about his past. Because, yeah, you know, fraction of your audience looking at the website compared to who are watching your television show. But instead they didn't. And the reason they didn't is because they just assumed, and probably rightly so, because their audience has got so small, they probably assumed that all the people watching knew who AJ Styles was.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, and if you like, say if Ronda Rousey signed for Bellator tomorrow, okay, and not she's going to, but you know what I mean. If she signs for Bellator tomorrow, Bellator on their next broadcast, whichever channel, network, or YouTube channel it is, are going to do a massive thing about how cool Ronda Rousey is. Because she's Ronda Rousey, and she's cool, and you should watch her and buy her t-shirts and see this fight because it's awesome.
Yeah, and I'll give you another example. If you have, let's say, there's a few things here, but first of all, let's say, right, you know, you've got a new player coming into the Premier League start of next season, okay? When they have a match live on television, before that match, even though it's got nothing to do with them directly because it's not their player, like in the WWE, everybody's their wrestler, but the television people will big that guy up and tell you what he's done before and tell you and run through the honors that he's won in past countries. They may even have some footage of him playing, you know, show you how good he is. Because they are in the business as well of promoting the sport that they're about to show you. So for them not to do that, for them not to try and inform their audience of who this guy is, but by actually telling you who he was and what he's done, other than just having JBL list off a meaningless list of title wins that he's had in the past, which is the other thing that JBL likes to do, you know, there's no gravitas to it. There's just no sense that this guy means something. So, you know, as things have gone on, I mean, even with the Shane McMahon thing, you know, when was the last time Shane McMahon was on television? Probably 2010.
Yeah.
And then he just comes out, and again, you're just expected to get excited because it's Shane McMahon. And, you know, I think Gavin, you know, made this point a while ago, certainly made it the point when I was talking to him once, where basically we're saying if in 1990, you know, during, let's say, WrestleMania 6, Hogan Ultimate Warrior, in the middle of the match, Bob Backlund interfered.
Yeah.
No one would be, everyone would be like, who the hell is this guy? He was only world champion 7 years ago, but who is he? Because wrestling had moved forward, because now not only did you have a new audience, but you also had actually evolved through time and you created this new product. But here you were being asked to remember who Shane McMahon was 6 years after he'd last been on television. And I'm not saying that there weren't a lot of people who did know that, but essentially what you're doing with your product is saying, only the people who do remember that can watch this now, because they're the only people that it means anything to. And that's why the audience is going down more and more in WWE's case. So when you say to me, you know, what do I think can be done to change that? I think, first of all, they have to start treating people as though they're watching the show without knowing everything already.
Yeah.
That's a big, I want continuity, which actually relies on people having watched in the past, but I don't want it to come at the expense of, I don't want it to come at the expense of new people trying to watch and be like, well, who's this guy? Why is everyone treating this guy like a big deal? I've never seen him before. And they've not told us why he's a big deal either. They do all this recapping of what's happened an hour ago, and then because they don't think we can remember it, but then they expect us to remember something from 6 years ago when they bring him out, and they expect us to be excited by it. I just think there's too many parts of the presentation which contradicts itself to the point where, as I said, the only people who seem to be watching now, as is borne out by how low the ratings have got, are those people that have subscribed to the network and therefore are watching all the time.
I was going to say, as the network exacerbated that problem, because
I think it has.
You've got the main drawing card for the company is the network now. I'll not say it's not the main one, but it certainly is a large part of their income. And I'll be honest, I had the network for 2 months, mainly because I forgot to cancel the subscription for the second month. And I watched it, and the only thing I watched in those 2 months were old Legends Roundtables, because I find them fascinating, because it's about an era of wrestling that I know a lot about, but want to find out more about, the old territory eras. That's where, to me, is the crux of the nebulous part of where the industry was born and why it's a success. And clearly no one in the WWE front office ever watches them. But but to me, it's just like, well, there's this ton of new product here. And I probably could have tweeted Paul and asked him, what should I watch? But I was Paul would have said, well, you need to watch this, but you'll hate it.
Well, not only that, but you'd have also probably needed about an hour just to read through the list. A lot of different things, I would imagine.
Yes, definitely. But it's like, I just didn't want to watch it. There's just nothing there of the new stuff. And even the old pay-per-view stuff, I've got a lot of it anyway on DVD, or I wouldn't necessarily want to watch it now. Rip Rogers, who's a trainer at OVW and has a stellar reputation as a great wrestling trainer.
And a great Twitter user as
great
well.
Twitter user. Hustler, I can't remember his name, but look him up. Rip Rogers, he's fantastic. And gives out a lot of advice. And one of the things he tweeted was, why would I pay new money for old wrestling when it's supposed to be a new product? It's supposed to be driving things forward. Rip is an old school kind of guy, and he grew up in the old school era, and he worked for Giant Baba and all of the great wrestling promoters everywhere in the world, because he's a wrestling geek and he loves wrestling. But his thought process is, we've got to move the business forward. You can use old school ideas or you can use new ideas, but we've got to move the business forward. That's his general thing. And his theory was, well, why would you spend money to watch old stuff? Why aren't you trying to produce new stuff that's as good as the old stuff, when you have wrestlers who theoretically, and this is no offense to the old guys, but are better trained, cleaner living, have more tools in their disposal, have better ways of presenting themselves? How can it not be better now than it was 20 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think the first thing is that you can't guarantee, as somebody creating this product, okay, that the current product is going to be better than it was 5 years ago, than it was 10 years ago, than it was 15 years ago. Can't guarantee that.
No.
And you only have to look at the Attitude Era to see how the product in 1998 was better than the product in 2005, for example. So you can't guarantee it's going to be better. But it doesn't help your cause when you're trying to present a new product if it's not as good as it previously was, but all that stuff that is what it previously was is available at a click of a button instantly to those people go and see. And it's not like it was on when the network didn't exist, when it was on YouTube, when you had to search things out, the quality wouldn't be as good or whatever. You're now actively encouraging your fan base to go and watch that stuff. And so they're constantly being reminded of how this product simply isn't as entertaining. And it's not even necessarily, it's not like you as a viewer can compare it like for like necessarily. But what you can do is you can measure the crowd reaction to everybody's involved, for example. And if you go back, even I would hesitate to guess, if you go back even 5 years, you'd find that the crowd reaction for nearly every single wrestler is more intense than it is now. And so I think that's one side of it, is that you're constantly being exposed to the past, which was better, or at least people were reacting to better. But then also it's that because the network is what it is, it's a beast that requires content. And what WWE have got in their minds is a group of about 40 or 50 people who are young and attractive and who are willing and ready to be on screen and in goodness knows what, whatever guise. And they think they've also got a fan base which knows every single thing about wrestling, in and out, backstage, whatever. So they're willing to have those people in all kinds of shows, like Swerved, like the podcast episodes, like Ride Along, all those kinds of things, where they are being asked to be themselves rather than the character they're portraying on screen. And it's not about, you know, it's not necessarily about just believing that the people that are in the ring are those people. You know, it's not necessarily about that. But certainly, if you're someone like Seth Rollins, who's built up a fantastic character and someone that people genuinely dislike on screen, and then you give him an interview with Renee Young, where he comes across as this really nice, affable guy, you're just completely shattering the illusion, even for someone like me, who I'm saying, well, I know Seth Rollins isn't that person, but then I can allow myself to believe that he's a bit like that, because all I've ever seen of him is this really, really douchey guy that I don't like.
Mm.
But the minute you put him there with Renee Young, he just shatters that entirely, and it removes an extra layer of, I said not belief necessarily, but just suspending your disbelief about the fact that you know that this guy is playing a part, but actually it feels like it's real because he's so good at it on screen. So I think you've got a double-edged, you've got those two things that are really playing on the success of the WWE in general. I think the network has been a big problem for them. And I remember saying to you not long ago that I was concerned when New Japan came out with New Japan World, because I said, I don't understand how they breed new business. I don't understand it, because if they don't even have, as I understand, and you correct me if I'm wrong, James, but as I understand, they don't even have exposure on television anymore.
It's all done on
New Japan World.
They have been sponsored by Asahi TV, which is the company that is the host company for New Japan World. So they have some TV production, but they don't have an awful lot of penetration. As much as penetration as they used to, and it is slightly odd in Japan as way how I and New Japan. How can I put this? Right, for the big show for Wrestle Kingdom, they've had a drop off, but their constant draw over the year in different markets, like Dominion was in Sendai, and that was a near sellout, I think. And there's quite a few other shows that've been big arenas, 10,000 seaters, and they've done either sold them out or done well with them.
Yeah.
Then they don't seem to drop off in their core markets. Tokyo is a bit of a different story, and it'll be interesting to see when they go back for Wrestle Kingdom next year with no Nakamura, how well they will do, because that's a big issue. You know, Nakamura in Tokyo could do no wrong. You know, he wrestled Chris Jericho there this week, and it's Kevin Owens, I think,
yes,
we talked about
Kevin
earlier.
Owens, yeah.
So, you know, that's the Nakamura is Tokyo. So for me, that's going to be interesting to see how they deal with that. But then again, they've been doing different and interesting things, maybe going a little too quickly storytelling wise for me this year, but they're still doing good things. But you're right, that penetration level is difficult. But equally, if you look at somebody like Progress.
Yeah.
Who have no TV deal and have built their reputation via word of mouth. And also World Wandering Stardom, to give another Japanese example, who 18 months ago were a complete mess. Their president resigned, their main draw had been fired, their second draw was in hospital and never likely to wrestle again. And this year they were able to do a European tour for a company that gets 1,000 people at Korakuen once every 3 months. So
yeah,
it's I can see what you're saying about streaming is a double-edged sword. For the bigger companies, it may be the death knell. For the smaller companies, it's a lifeblood which can really push themselves way beyond the expectations of what they had.
Well, I just wonder. I mean, there's two ways to look at this. The first way is the negative way, which is that the reason I think it matters for New Japan and WWE in particular is that they're the ones that will draw that initial interest in wrestling. So I I may be wrong in this, and there probably will be some exceptions, but I would imagine the people who like Stardom and like Progress began watching wrestling because they watched New Japan or WWE.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point.
And then found those promotions and thought, yes, they're really good. So whilst more and more of those fans that perhaps have been exposed to WWE and became interested in wrestling have now either also added Progress or Stardom or RevPro or whoever else onto their diet of watching wrestling, they've also they were already part of the wrestling fan base. The difficulty is I don't know how anybody new coming to wrestling, certainly into WWE, for example, would find WWE to be engaging to them, because WWE are inaccessible for a new fan, as far as I can tell. You know, there is no way in which they introduce the characters. The characters don't have a defined constitution. The storylines don't make sense from week to week. And the only thing that is of good quality is the in-ring action, which, think back to when you first watched wrestling. You didn't know what a good match was, and you didn't know what a bad match was. You just knew, oh, these two guys are fighting over this title, and I want one of them to win. So when I watched SummerSlam 94 and I saw Bret versus Owen in the cage, I was still more interested in the fact that The Undertaker and The Undertaker are fighting each other, even though it was a ridiculously terrible match. And I think you'll find that that's how most people come into it. So I find WWE is inaccessible. And what I worry about is New Japan is inaccessible because of its lack of exposure on Japanese television, to the point where I wonder whether or not they've got a ever increasingly aged fan base, and that will continue in the future because they're just not being exposed to enough new people. And, you know, people, I know that, for example, in Japan, wrestling is, you know, sort of an embedded culture. It's one of those, you know, one of the big things. Yeah. But football is in this country, and football would not survive without its television exposure. If you didn't have television exposure, less children would be interested and get interested in football. It's that simple. It doesn't matter how embedded in culture it is, they would be. And so, you know, what I'm thinking about is, okay, so Progress, Stardom, you know, all these other promotions around may get more fans as time goes on, but the pool of wrestling fans as a total is dropping.
Yes, it has to diminish. Yeah,
it's diminishing, and there's not. And as I said, I just can't see how new people, and you know, obviously I've got no firsthand evidence to back this up, other than the fact that ratings are dropping. But I just can't see how new people would enjoy wrestling, because it's completely inaccessible to them at the moment, I think.
I think that's interesting as well. And I looked at, about a year and a bit ago, I started looking at West Coast Wrestling Connection, who got a national TV do through a small TV station. And that intrigued me, because they weren't doing anything flashy. Mm. The production values aren't great. They're okay. You know, it's a local doing a wrestling show in Portland.
Yeah.
And Paragon in Las Vegas, which has got the same crew more or less, so they kind of fly between TV tapings for the two companies. But it's a very nuts and bolts show. They do all the right things in the right places. They have somebody come in. So Joey Ryan had a run in West Coast Wrestling Connection for a couple of TV tapings. So they came in, so they interviewed him, they presented him. This is Joey Ryan. You may have heard of him from TNA, you may have heard of him from PWG, but this is Joey Rowan. And Joey cuts a promo explaining what he's going to do, because he's going to be a heel, so he does it in a heelish way. And there's a character. He goes, has his match. Then they do, you know, they did all the right things, because it's a nuts and bolts wrestling company that's based on the old territory idea, but it's eminently watchable. And anybody who just flicks on the TV can get into the story because of what you just said. You know, it's not about long-term, like the forgotten continuity of the past. They're introducing people correctly and giving their backstory. And it intrigues me that those are the companies that got national TV deals, whereas a company like Shikara, though it's great, and I love Shikara, I am a massive Shikara mark, and you know I am, but I understand that, you know, Swamp Monster, you tell that to a TV executive, they're going to go away very quickly. So, yeah, it does intrigue me. Is like, yeah, you know, and I'm not knocking West Coast Wrestling Connection or Paragon, because I think their shows are very good. It's not something maybe the listeners of this show, who tend to be smart wrestling fans, you are, guys. You're awesome because you're listening to the show. But, but you know, it's not something that the fans of this show or even Wrestle Talk in general would want to watch because it's hokey and it's old school and it's, but it's, that's the kind of thing that WWE should be doing because that's what they always did. And when you look at them at their biggest moments, the Hulkamania era, sure, you had wrestling plumbers and so on and so forth, but you understood what that character did and where their place was in the company and what they were likely to do.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing is I would say that I've been a little bit sort of against stuff that makes wrestling seem faker maybe than it needs to. But then equally, I got into wrestling, you know, in 1994 when The Undertaker died, went to heaven, came back, and had a doppelganger. So it's not as if, you know, I think it matters to growth at all. And so it's, for me, there is... And though I have also said I'm not really a big fan of it, I haven't watched a lot of it, I would say that Lucha Underground is about the best thing that wrestling could be doing right now. Because what it does is at least you have a narrative, you have a storyline that you can follow from episode to episode. It doesn't forget what it's done in the past. It rewards you for watching it over the course of time, but it also rewards you for watching it the first time. And it tries, and it doesn't matter that it's you know, obviously not a real sporting competition because they've established the rules of the universe they're working in, just in the same way as, you know, it's like saying that a television show where people could fly, right, is instantly wrong and can't work because people can't do that. Well, as long as you set up the universe that you're working within to do that, then there's no problem. In Game of Thrones, there are dragons, but no one's saying that's not realistic because it doesn't matter. It's, you've built that into the universe you've created. It's the same thing with Lucha Underground. They've built that sense of, okay, this is how this universe works. We know it's not really wrestling in the most strictest sense of the word, but it still works as a television concept. It doesn't necessarily work, though. This is the only thing I will say about it. It doesn't necessarily work to sell tickets. No. And that is the other big problem. And I think so, if for wrestling to survive, it needs to do one of two things. It either needs to give up the ghost and say, we are going to entirely focus our show towards television because it's the only way we can continue to survive. Or it needs to go back to finding some essence of realism so that they can sell tickets and they can sell pay-per-views and, you know, whatever else, you know, on-demand subscriptions, I suppose. But it can't do what it's doing right now. And in my opinion, what it's doing right now is it's literally just burning through every possible combination of match that it can do at a rate that's simply not sustainable. It can't keep doing that. It's just, and that seems to be the only thing that these people are using to draw people in. You know, it's WWE and they're saying, oh, you know, we've signed every excellently talented indie wrestler in the world now, which they haven't done yet because there's still an incredible amount of them in this country. But they think they have, and they probably will continue to do that. We've put them all into matches with each other. Now we've got nothing left, and now we're going back to the original point which you made about half an hour ago, which is, and now we've got nothing else for them to do, so they're going to go leave and go and work on, you know, work the Battle of Los Angeles, and they're going to want to fight Kurt Angle, a la Cody Rhodes.
Yeah.
A note on Cody Rhodes, though, James, and interesting when he got released was the reaction of a lot of people, and I said at the time, I said not long before it, I think, because was it a month before that they had the mass release of talent? I think when Damian Sandow went.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
I said at that time, Cody Rhodes needs to go there as well. They need to get rid of him as well. And a lot of people were angry with me that because they said he's a really talented guy. I said, look, he is talented, but he'll never be a top-line star. WWE have made sure that he'll never be a top-line star. They are not interested in using him. He's barely ever on television. And when he is on television, he's playing a character that is derivative of his older brother and a character that he played 15, 20 years ago. He's not doing anything there and he's not working for him. And I think there's another point that I'm putting Gavin over a lot tonight, but there's another point Gavin made was that there's a generation of wrestlers like this that have got only so far. And then WWE said, well, we don't really see you as a main guy, so we're just going to recycle you back into the mid-card We're going to bring you right down. Then you're going to get injured. Then we're going to bring you back. Then you're going to have a sort of push to the upper mid-card echelon. Then you're going to come down again, and that's it. Because we don't want you. We don't see you as a top guy. So I wasn't that worried. I wasn't that gutted about Cody Rhodes or anything. A lot of people were upset about it. But, you know, what are you going to do? And I understand now he's going off and doing what he wants to do.
Yeah.
But I don't think that he's going to – I think other than – a mild excitement from some, how you would say, hardcore fan base of wrestling, I suppose. I don't think it's going to do anything for anybody else.
No, I think that's the issue, is like, back in the day in the territory era, so if someone had burnt through their 2-year run, they'd had the first, like the Roddy Piper thing, you start off as a heel, you do your year as a heel, and then you turn to get the run on the way down as well. You've got 2 years, then you move on somewhere else. That business model worked for a very long period of time, and there's reasons why it had to stop, but there's reasons why it shouldn't stop, in the sense of, is it time for WWE to think of, right then, and I'm not sure if they do or not, but having more hard and fast rules about 6 years is your lot, and then you're gone. Because otherwise, are you not just, you're not cycling your fans through fast enough to keep them interested. I mean, I just did the wrestling symposium, and my paper was, as we talked about on the show a couple of weeks ago, my paper was about the 26 rule in Joshi,
right,
which is you had to retire at 26, as my friend Chelsea Spollen said, past 25, your Christmas cakes, nobody wants them. Which was, you know, that was the Japanese attitude at the time. You would need to go off and get married. That's it. Which is a harsh, cynical, you know, sexist rule, and said an awful lot about Japanese patriarchy, but you know, all systems are patriarchal. But is it time for WWE, maybe not to be overt about it, but certainly think about 5-6 years, if we haven't got anywhere with you, you're done. Because, and if the workers are working on that principle, they may get more out of the workers for a start, and also they may get, you know, they're going to get a cycle of new people that can reinvigorate the company more directly. Because as you said, a lot of people who are there have been there for a long time. And I understand WrestleMania, yes, you need some star power every once in a while to push it. But we had a WrestleMania which made no new stars. All the new stars that you had were put over by part-timers. Or, you know, had to do something with part-timers which wasn't great for their career. And I look at the people who've gone back to WWE. Alberto Del Rio is a great case. In AAA and Lucha Underground, he was a wrestling god. You know, he could do no wrong. And within a month of being back in the WWE, he's a mid-card one-note comedy act.
I think there's a couple of things. First of all, the thing about the time period. It's interesting. As you get older, time, there's a perception, because you see time is going faster, you forget how much time has passed. So when I was younger, I used to think, oh my God, you know, the modern Rick Martel has been around forever in WWE. Of course, actually, the modern Rick Martel came in about 87 into WWE and was around till about 93.
Yeah.
That was pretty much his run. That's 6 years.
Mm.
Okay, that's not that long, really, when you consider how long Cody Rhodes have been around, or Kofi Kingston has been around, or Dolph Ziggler has been around, okay? And yet, we're still talking about those guys that are there. So I think, first of all, WWE used to have a rule where actually you did get cycled out unless you were actually an important act. If you're Hogan, Savage, Steamboat, someone, you know, you probably would stick around for a bit longer. But the vast majority of people, if you got 6 years, that was a good run. That was a really good run. And of course, part of that is that there were also other places to go work and make money.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of wrestlers did just jump ship, knowing that they could elongate their careers and get another big payday if they did. But, you know, that's one part of it. The second part is that, again, wrestling, for me, my biggest philosophy, there's one simple thing. Wrestling is perception. Wrestling is perception. There's nothing else. Perception's all that counts. If you can, and so for someone like Cody Rhodes, for example, you have created the perception that Cody Rhodes isn't a good wrestler. Not good wrestler as in has great matches, but just a good wrestler as in wins matches. yeah. is good at winning matches, because he doesn't win matches. He never wins matches. And when he did string a few wins together, he'd soon lose. Now, that's fine, perception-wise, if you have an idea that in maybe Cody Rhodes' fifth year, he's going to go on that one defining run. And you're going to have the commentators go say things like, well, we've seen this before from Cody, but when he gets near the top, you know, he falls off and drops down again. You know, he has a habit of choking when he gets near the top. And they really build up this idea of this guy that is now has to do it this time, otherwise it's done. You know, just in the same way as you do in other sports. Other sports have the same thing happens to athletes. And that's a perception thing. You can build that if you want, but they're not doing that. What they're doing is they're just they're creating this perception of these guys, these characters, and they are living up to the fact that they are essentially nothing or nobody. If Cody Rhodes was a real sportsman and his career in WWE represented a real career, that would be seen as relatively mediocre because, okay, he was there for a long time, but he did nothing. Dolph Ziggler, the same. I mean, maybe Dolph Ziggler's a little bit better because he's won the World Heavyweight Championship in the past, but really and truthfully, if he was a real sportsman, you'd be going, well, that's not that impressive, really. Mm. Yeah, he's really not done that much. You know, so it's about perception. And for me, you have complete control of your universe as a wrestling promotion. You know, you have the ability to write all the storylines. You can tell the wrestlers what to do, what not to do. You can tell the commentators what to say, what not to say. You can present you can present your show in any way you want. You can show people as much or as little as you want of every single person involved. There is no part of your product that you can't control other than maybe the fan reaction. But that's the point. All these other things go into creating that fan reaction. And, you know, if you're doing your job well, you can create that reaction as well. You can entirely mold it to what you want it to be. I just think that what's happened is that over time, WWE have become so poor at telling stories that they have had to change the disposition of a character, let's say, four or five times in the space of 4 or 5 years. And wrestling fans have gone, well, seeing as I can't rely on WWE to give me a consistent narrative, I'm just going to choose which ones I'll cheer and which ones I won't cheer. Because I can't rely, I know that if I get liking this guy that they are presenting as a good guy at the moment, well, in 6 months' time, he's probably going to be a bad guy anyway because they can't keep themselves from doing that every 6 months. So why should I bother? I may as well just choose who I like. And WWE have decided in their eternal laziness that they're going to accept that. They're just going to build into that. So they just do that. Now they don't even bother giving them a constitution. They just let you choose. And they don't, and because they don't give you necessarily a good guy or a bad guy, they know they never have to fulfill any long-term commitment with any individual character. And it's just a cycle of then, well, now the fans are even less willing to buy into what happens. So they just, you're a wrestling promotion. You have the ability to mold your fans' reactions to the people that are there. If you aren't doing that, you're doing the one job that you've really got really badly. And that's really the whole shebang for me, is that if WWE's biggest problem is absolutely that, the lack of their control over the perception of the people involved in their promotion. And they've got no reason they can't do it. They're just too lazy and they're just not good at it. They've lost all of the understanding, knowledge and ability to actually mold people's perception about what they're seeing in front of them.
Could a character like Tommy Dreamer or Ricky Steamboat, who had their entire careers based on being faces, honourable, good guys who were there for the good of the sport or for the good of the company or for the good of what the fans believed in, and did that for 20 years, is it actually possible to do that now?
I think so. I think it is. I think that if you can, for example, Tommy Dreamer, if you can do that in ECW, you can do that anywhere.
Yeah.
I think the problem is, though, it's not that could the character exist now, it's could the character exist in the world WWE have created now.
Yeah.
I don't think they could. And because WWE have created that, as I say, most other promotions follow suit because also their fans are expecting something specific, which usually is informed by what WWE are doing. Mm. I think it could, but I don't think it's got anything to do with being now. I think people could, buy into a character like that who, as long as his character has got that constitution and you understand what that driving force is, it can't just be that he's just a good guy.
Yeah.
That's the problem. It needs to be wedded to something else. So again, in Game of Thrones, for example, Ned Stark is honorable. Honor feeds everything he does. Every action he takes is about honor. What Game of Thrones does brilliantly is exposes how his honor actually makes things difficult for other people and actually makes it hard for the country or the, you know, Westeros itself, the kingdom that he lives in, because he makes choices based on honor rather than what will save the most lives.
Yeah.
But you have that constitution, which means you always like Ned Stark, but you are not going to... You can't be in that position if it's just he's a good guy. That's what he does. You have to have a reason why he is those things. And often, and that's what gets lost. And I think in the case of Tommy Dreamer, for example, you knew what that was. You understood that he had this, you know, this loyalty to what ECW, he felt ECW stood for. And that was the idea, you know. And even now when he's in TNA or whatever, when he turns up there, you know what he stands for. And it's fed back to that idea of he's protecting the legacy of this thing that he helped create along with all these other people that revolutionized the business. Well, who can't buy into that? You know,
yeah.
That makes sense. But it's got to be informed by something. It can't just be he's a good guy. And that's, I think, maybe the issue with John Cena is that we don't really know why he's a good guy. We just know that he is. You know, we don't know what has informed his moral fiber. You know, we don't know why he has a set of rules in his mind that, you know, inform his morality. And as such, we just look at him and go, well, you're just a good guy, but why? You know, why? And then, to be honest, some of the characteristics are not good anyway. You know, some of the things he does aren't good. I'm thinking specifically about some of the things he said in the past which could be construed as homophobic, for example. So, you know, that's what I think. I think absolutely you can have that character that is just inherently good, but you have to give the reason why. It can't just be he's a good guy.
It does worry me when, you know, you have Vince and, you know, other WWE writers talking about, oh, we need shades of grey, like, you know, Breaking Bad is a brilliant TV show, and it's like, yes it is, but they can reshoot shots as many times as they want, and you can't. You know,
it's not the same thing. I think the other thing, though, is that I'm not sure that anybody in Breaking Bad had a good shade of grey.
Yeah.
If I'm looking at that television show, I think you can pretty much inform yourself that of Walter and Jesse, for example, we know perfectly well who the bad guy is in that situation. We know that Walter's the bad guy. We know Jesse's the good guy. Yes, they've done things that are not necessarily heroic in their lives and through the series, but at no point did we think of Jesse as being this guy that was a bad guy. You know, we didn't think of him as someone... Yes, he was flawed and he did things that were perhaps a mistake, or he allowed his heart to get the better of his judgment. But we knew that it all came from a good place. And equally, we knew from about series two, it was quite clear that Walter White was not coming from a good place. Most of the stuff he was doing was entirely selfish, entirely driven by some selfish need to make himself leave a legacy of some kind.
Yeah.
And so, actually, I don't think there were shades of grey. There are shades of grey in terms of individual pieces of something where they do something that you're like, oh, you know, just like a normal human being would do. But at the end of the day, you knew who the good guy was and you knew who the bad guy was. It's like Austin. I've always said Austin was not a shade of grey. Austin was clearly a good guy. He was a hero. He was the guy who stood up for what he believed in. He worked hard. He stood alone. You know, yeah. He didn't run in gangs. He was the guy who had a very clear set of a very clear moral compass. It may be that it wasn't the same as Hulk Hogan's moral compass, but it was still designed entirely to make people cheer for him rather than to just go, well, you can pick whether you cheer for him or not, because sometimes he does bad things and sometimes he does good things. There's a difference. And I think that wrestling fans have been, a lot of people have been sold the idea that Steve Austin was a shade of Gray character, and I just don't think he was. I think basically he was an anti-hero, but I don't think that makes that. I don't think that shades of. I think Shades of Gray is a completely different thing. I think Shades of Gray is an excuse to not consistently write a character.
Yeah,
you know, if you have a character that does bad and good things, then fine, so long as the audience understands what's behind each decision. And usually it comes down to one defining factor. So it could be protecting their family. It could be, you know, doing anything to win the world title. It could be, you know, so for example, someone who would do anything to win the world title, in one case, they might be a guy who never gives up, never submits, kicks out of nearly everything. You know, it's just almost impossible to beat him, despite the fact that you do all these things to him. But then if he was to turn heel, you could use that to go, but you know, he will sink to any low to hold on to that title. But it's informed by the same drive at the base level.
Yeah.
And that's how you, if you're going to do in Shades of Grey in commas, that's how you do it. You don't just go, oh, well, this today he's going to do this bad. He's going to be a bad guy and he's going to break the rules. And then tomorrow he's not going to break the rules and you're going to love him because he's going to save his best mate. And then the next week he's not going to save his best mate. He's not going to care. But then the week after that, he's going to, you know, he's going to kiss up to one of the bosses. And then the following week, he's going to attack one of them. There's no logic. There is no sort of core behind any of those actions.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And looking at like historical precedents, the only one I can think of is Diesel. You know, when he finished the championship run and he beat Bret Hart for the title in a laboriously long year that was really bad for business for the WWE, and he finishes the title run, loses to Bret, and power bombs him straight away. And he suddenly becomes an interesting character again.
Yeah.
But it wasn't because he was a heel. He explained himself in a promo the next night. He said, I'm not a bad guy. I'm not a good guy. I can have bad days. And I'm not going to stop tagging hands with you, but he's got to have a black glove on it because you're supporting me. And he instantly found forgiveness from the fans who believed in him. And he probably alienated a few fans as well. But that's a tweener. That's what it should be. He'd still given his reasons for what he did to Bret. But that didn't stop him tagging with Sean. And Sean was still a good guy and Bret was still a good guy. So it all works out in the middle. And then you see have the slow decline of Diesel into being a heel. And that's another set of stories you can tell. But, you know, there was a clearly defined reason of why he did it. He was frustrated that he lost the championship. And his actions then follow on from that. It wasn't just snap, you know, it wasn't a snap heel turn. No. But it had to go somewhere. It couldn't just be there for no reason.
No, totally. And yeah, in fairness, it's arguable that Diesel, the action Diesel took at that point, revolutionized the business, arguably, because that then informed everything the NWO did when he moved over to WCW with Scott Hall. In that they were cool, well, in their minds, they were cool heels. Now, I know what you mean. Diesel was a tweener, but he was also, you could argue, a cool heel in that he did some bad things, but people liked him anyway because he was, you know, he was kind of, he just had that cool factor. And so, yeah, I totally agree. I just think it's, you know, I think it's simple. I think that's the problem, is I think if you write those characters and you, as a group of writers, if you give every one of those characters a driving force behind them, what it is that drives their character, then the stories write themselves. It's so simple. It's so obvious. You know, if I don't know, John Cena's driven by, you know, I don't know, the WWE title and wanting the WWE title. And I guess probably all wrestlers should have a degree of this in them because that's the point. then that informs everything it does. And so when it comes to what decisions does he make, does he side with the champion or side against him? It informs that decision and you can make an easy decision from that. It doesn't necessarily matter if the champion is a good guy or a bad guy. If you really want to do Shades of Grey, that's how you do it. But their Shades of Grey is, it allows us to do whatever we want, whenever we want, because we can't be bothered to try and keep a consistent picture, because it actually takes a bit of effort. And it means we can't book on the fly half an hour before the show starts. And it means we can't just, reintroduce a character from years ago and make them a babyface or a heel. I mean, sorry, going off the track a little bit, but when AJ Styles, when Seth Rollins returned recently, and a lot of people saying he should have come back as a babyface, I was thinking, why?
Yeah.
What part of the narrative suggests that he's a babyface? There's none. He is a bad guy. He was a bad guy before he left. He's not seen him since. So that he's not a good guy. You can't bring him back as a good guy. And what you could have done is if you'd had a few video spots in the time when he'd been injured and done something to realign the character and done something where Seth Rollins spoke about, you know, realizing that Triple H was only out for himself, as shown by the fact that he went to WrestleMania to, you know, headline WrestleMania as the world champion. And that, you know, I don't know, something to that degree, maybe you can do it. What they did with Triple H in 2002 when he had his big injury, but they had those video spots showing how courageous he was, how brave he was to come to finish the match and come through the injury, you know, and get himself back in ring shape. That's fine, but you can't just bring the guy back and expect everyone to cheer for him just because that was convenient for you as a promoter. It's got to work in some way in the narrative, and it isn't hard to do it, but it just takes a bit of forward planning.
I mean, we talked about this before, but one thing, you know, that we don't see in wrestling that you perhaps should more of is if you're a writer on EastEnders, you the first thing they give you is a biography of every character. So you can find out what's happened to them. So if Dot Cotton has had an assassination attempt 15 years ago, you'll find out about it, so you don't write an assassination attempt against Dot Cotton again. because it's the custodians of EastEnders are a changing mass of people just as much as the actors are, in fact, probably more so. And yeah, the number of hands that touch an EastEnders script in the period of a year is phenomenal. Mm. And in pro wrestling, that's tighter. There's less people who do it. But the basic understanding of where a character is and where a character's going gets lost, I think, a lot of the time. And TNA used to do this an awful lot, though this year they have tightened up on that. And one thing I am pleased to say about TNA is they've brought the scope in. They're not making stories ridiculously complex, and the programming has been so much better for it, despite the fact it's not drawing as much as it should do. Well, it's drawing plenty, but it's not drawing, you know, enough for advertisers to put money into it, which is a whole different story, which we talked about earlier. But, you know, the one thing TNA has done well this year is the fact that their stories aren't ridiculous. Their stories have a beginning, a middle, and end, and there is, you can see where characters are going, which a year ago I couldn't do. But it seems to me, as an outside observer of WWE, what people complain about is that lack of continuity of where people are going and why is X happening to Y.
Yeah, I mean, totally. I mean, the EastEnders thing, I think I've spoken about before. I'm pretty certain, in fact, I know that 15 years ago, this might not be the case anymore, but 15 years ago, they had someone who worked for EastEnders whose entire job was to correct any continuity errors.
Yeah.
So they would get the script and it would be like, oh, it's Doc Cotton's birthday today. and they'd be like, no, it's not. In 1987, you told us Doc Cotton's birthday was on the 23rd of September. Now we're talking about 14th of April. and they genuinely, that was somebody's job. And when you consider that in wrestling you have, apparently in WWE now, you have a writing team of 30-odd people, it wouldn't be wrong to have someone be that person in WWE, quite frankly. You know, them, especially when they've got now, what, 3 hours and then two on a Tuesday now, SmackDown, of television to fill, 5 hours every single week of programming that you're expecting people to care about and invest in. It would probably pay them to have someone who was like, well, actually, you can't really have, I don't know, well, I'll give you a big one, which always bothered me, but didn't seem to bother anyone else. Just going back a bit as well, WrestleMania 25, Triple H and Stephanie were presented as man and wife on screen for the first time in a very long time. And however, the story back in 2002, whatever it was, so WrestleMania 18 or 19 or something, was that they divorced.
Right.
Now, okay, I've kind of contradicted myself because I'm saying, you know, you can't expect people who weren't watching back then to know that stuff. But that's not to say that you don't also have a duty to the people who were watching to go, to tie up that little continuity error. So all it would have taken is for them to go. All it would have taken was them to present Triple H and Stephanie as sort of revisiting their relationship, being in a position where they were sort of back together, but you know, not really certain what was going to happen, but just trying things out. And even had Randy Orton expose that that was what they were doing, that he would be the guy who would make it public that they're, you know, they're rekindling their relationship, and now I'm going to try and destroy it all, basically. That would have worked just as well as presenting them as man and wife, and would have also fit the narrative long term of the entire piece. But they didn't do it. They just went ahead, oh, they're man and wife, and we were expected to buy it. And I think that's wrong.
No, I agree with you. And I think that's one of the reasons why people buy into the smaller promotions a lot more, that are much more narratively based, like Lucha Underground, like Chikara, like Progress, because they do respect what the fans, you know, they're the ones that, I think it works both ways. We've always, both of us have talked about the fact that Ring of Honor do so well because they have a fan base that's invested. They want to literally invest in the product. They will buy streams, they will buy DVDs, they will buy t-shirts, and the company survives and is in a much better financial position than TNA because they're dealing with solid assets. They're not dealing with liquid money all the time.
Yeah.
And yes, all right, their program may not look as good on TV, but that doesn't really matter to Ring of Honor because they're going to sell tickets, they're going to sell merch, and they're going to do okay. But the fans are invested because there's a long-term payoff to everything that they do, especially Chikara. The people are tied into Chikara because there is a long-term payoff to every season. You are going to see a story unfold, and they are going to, the unlikeliest of things will happen. But they will pay them all off. So, and they will throw back to things from 5 or 6 years before because they know their fans are bought into the whole thing.
Well, let me go back to that Ring of Honor thing, because I think in Ring of Honor, the continuity is more about the sport in Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
There haven't been that many ROH world champions. You know, the title doesn't change hands very often.
No.
And when it does change hands, you know that the person winning it is going to be a big deal, to at least present it as a big deal in the company. And you look, actually, if you look through the past of Ring of Honor's champions, you will see exactly that fact, that every single one of those people are a big deal. Nearly every single one of these people are a big deal. Obviously, you're going to get some misses, but you know, when you look at the fact that, you know, Samoa Joe, Seth Rollins, Daniel Bryan, and many, many others, fantastic wrestlers, have won that world championship, and nearly to a man, they're great wrestlers. Now, some will say it's because they are such talented guys that they've gone on to mean so much. I'd argue that part of that is just that Ring of Honor have done such a damn good job of presenting them as a great wrestler as well.
Yeah.
And that is not. You know, the fact that people are excited by Kevin Owens or whoever else has won that title is not just because they're a great wrestler, because Ring of Honor presented them as such. So I think that's where that comes from, Ring of Honor. And then you also mentioned Progress there. One of the best things I've seen in wrestling is not, you know, it won't be any news to anybody who's seen Progress since they've been alive, but was the Jimmy Havoc storyline.
Yeah. Mm.
And that was a fantastic thing that began really it sort of this their second show, Chapter 2, and went and didn't really culminate until Chapter 10, which was at that point 2 years later, because they obviously didn't do a huge amount of shows when they first started, when he won the Progress title. And then that's him being champion and his journey as champion and this heel guy that everyone in the company hated and everyone wanted to see to lose the title. He didn't drop the title, I believe, until I think it was Chapter 20. And not only at that point was that then sort of 3.5 years after the initial beginning of that story, but also it launched Will Ospreay as their new champion. So, and he'd already had like his own journey leading to that point as well. So I totally agree with you. That's how some of the smaller companies have grown. The ones that are growing fast are the ones that are doing that. They are rewarding their fans for having been on board from an earlier point. But they're not excluding new people at the same time.
No.
That's the important part. They're keeping people abreast of it. If they're joining halfway through, you can still pick up the story. But at the same time, it still pays off if you've been there for all the entire journey.
So I guess we should kind of wrap up sometime soon because we're on an hour and a half. We've done well.
Well, that's the thing. You've got me, the problem is you have me talking. The first time I've spoken about wrestling publicly for 8 months, at least possibly 9 months now, thinking about it. And, you know, it was always going to happen. I had so much in me stored up. And as I said to you before, I can't really focus anything specific in my mind right now because I'm not watching a lot of wrestling. When I watch wrestling, it tends to be with a sort of dipping my foot in, saying, oh, do I want to watch this? No, not really. But, you know, and I'll be fair to wrestling. Not all of it is just it's bad. Some of it is just that I've lost a little bit of, you know, and I've said this before, my watching days in wrestling have gone through these peaks and troughs where I will go for a year and not, I didn't really bother watching it. I keep abreast of what's going on, but I don't really watch it very much, and then I'll just watch it insanely and intensely for a year or so and then drop off again. But you know, I've never felt less inclined to revisit it than I do right now, put it that way.
Hmm. Well, is there anything positive you can say to finish our podcast on today, Ben?
I tell you what, there is some positives. What I will say is that not watching so much wrestling has allowed me to rewatch the entirety of The West Wing.
Excellent.
It's allowed me to rewatch the entirety of Only Fools and Horses. It's allowed me to reread the entire Song of Ice and Fire series. It's allowed me to negotiate and buy a house and, you know, get a new job as well. It's allowed me to put collate on Spotify the 1,000 best songs list that I made a couple of years back, which I never really ended up getting to put out there fully. So I've actually now collated it all into one playlist in Spotify. So it's allowed me to do a lot of other things with my life. Not all of them particularly, you know, groundbreaking, but certainly has allowed me to, you know, to enjoy other bits and pieces of popular culture, which is something that I enjoy doing. So less wrestling has allowed me to do other things. And I guess the other thing that I will say about it is that there is positives. I mean, yeah, if you are still watching wrestling, I'm not trying to get you to stop watching wrestling. I said to a lot of people, and I will continue to say on Twitter when people ask me about it, if you enjoy wrestling and you I just maybe feel a little bit disillusioned by WWE, go and watch, in this country, go and watch British wrestling because there are so many companies out there. There are, you know, put it this way, 5 years ago, I think only All-Star were coming to Bristol, you know, to run a show, and they may be doing that twice a year. There are now five different companies who run Bristol.
Yeah.
One of them does 10 shows, 10 shows in a year. Another one does 3 or 4 a year in Bristol. I think a couple of them do 3 or 4 a year in Bristol. I mean, it's just an insane amount of wrestling just in my, you know, in my city. And that is the same for everywhere. You know, there are promotions in every relatively sized town in the country right now, running regularly. So you can find it. And then there are the more nationally visible ones. There are Progress, there are NGW, Rev Pro, you know, PCW, ICW, of course, you know, and they all do different things. They all provide something different. You will find something you like, I guarantee you. So if I'm being positive, that's the best thing I can do is say, look, there is an independent wrestling boom in this country where, you know, not only is there, you know, no, loads and loads of promotions, but there are lots of promotions now drawing big numbers to all kinds of different places. You know, I mean, ICW obviously are trying to get 8,000 to the Hydro in November or October, which is insane. Progress are running Brixton Academy. You know, I said RevPro continue to set up York Hall. It's the numbers are insane. You know, the numbers of people going to watch wrestling as well are insane. So it's a vibrant, exciting world. Long may it continue. So that's my positive spin on everything is that, you know, if you're a wrestling fan already, there's plenty of you to plenty for you to enjoy.
Definitely. You know, I one of the, like, I have no national pride, you know this. but when Steve Corino at Best of Super Juniors listed off a bunch of people in the British wrestling industry, El Aguero, Alex Shane, and I went back to mention Vic Faulkner and Mark Rocco, and it's like, the last 5 or 6 years of the British wrestling industry, in fact, really the last 20 years of the British wrestling industry, have got us to this point. And it was very proud, a very proud moment. Like, all these cool people, some of them we know, are doing so many cool things to make the British wrestling industry so great at the moment. And it's the reason why you have guys like Will Ospreay being arguably one of the best wrestlers in the world. So, yeah. You know, and being acclaimed as such, because we've always had great wrestling, but it's never been necessarily acclaimed in that way that it is doing today.
I'd suggest to you that outside of WWE, the people in who enjoy American style wrestling are most buzzing about Will Ospreay and Zack Sabre Jr. Yeah. And actually, I was going to say Zach Gibson for a second, but Zach Gibson is fantastic, yes. By the way. He is possibly, in my opinion, probably better than all of them, just because he's also got being a heel down to a T. And he's also got the size as well. I just think he's going to be a star in WWE one day. I've said that for about a year now. Yeah. The people that are, you know, the two people that are probably most being raved about who are outside of WWE but by American wrestling fans are Will Ospreay and Zack Sabre Jr., and with good reason, because they're both fantastic. And there are lots of people like that across the British wrestling in, you know, the scene. There are just so many good wrestlers out there. And I can't. It's difficult for me to, after all of the negativity, to put a legitimate face on my positivity for that. But I genuinely do have a lot of positivity for the British wrestling scene at the moment. And I just think, I really do think that not only do I think if you're disillusioned with WWE, you should go watch these people, but genuinely, I think if you're not disillusioned with WWE, you should stop watching WWE and watch what's going on in British wrestling instead, because it's that much better.
Yes, and I would concur and agree with that. And you should always go and find out the other thing, because the other thing can often be the best thing.
Well, it's like when you go in, put it this way, you know, it's like whatever you're into, whatever it is. Let's say you're into music. If you're into pop music when you were 12, by the time you got to 16, you probably found something that was a little bit more niche. By the time you got to 21, you probably found something that was even a little bit more niche than that was. And then from there, you probably found lots of other things that were also very niche, but are very, very different from that first thing that you found that was very niche. And you love them so much more than you did that pop music in the first place. If you are really into films, the same is probably true. You probably got in watching Mrs. Doubtfire or something. That's probably showing my age a little bit now, but something on that level. Since then, you've probably got into more niche films, more adult films, more nuanced films, and slowly you find you like more films that are more niche than you originally did, and slowly that's gone, carried on. It's the same for wrestling, and it's the same for practically anything you like. And so you start off with the pop music, the WWE or the TNA, and then you find something a bit more niche, you find that you like that more, and then you also find other things that are niche that you also like a lot as well.
Definitely. Right then, we best call that it for today after an epic show. Thank you very much, Ben. It has been absolutely a blast talking to you again, and we must do this again soon.
Yeah, hopefully I will be able to give you something a bit more. We'll be able to talk about something a bit more focused, and I won't be anywhere near as negative. I have plans to watch. We've talked a lot about Progress. I had previously been watching a lot of Progress, but I stopped for a while just because I stopped watching everything. But I am planning to watch their most recent show when it goes up on there on demand. So maybe that will fire a rebirth of interest for me in wrestling in general, and that will help us, you know, talk about something more positive in the future.
I did promise my mate Si in Manchester that I would go and see Progress when the next time I go to Manchester at some point, or I was either that or go see ICW at the Hydro, so I will have to go see. I have been getting out to wrestling shows a lot more this year, which has been nice. Now I've bought the house, I've actually had time to go do that.
Well, that's it. Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing is I'm buying a house, so I'm going to be decorating that.
Yeah,
probably for the next 6 months. So it may not be for a very long time, but I will. I promise you, I'll come back, and next time we'll talk about something, you know, a bit more positive than today.
Excellent.
And you should probably put in at the start a disclaimer, maybe even this, what I'm saying now, which is that I'm really sorry for what you're about to listen to, but it is literally me getting on my high horse about what wrestling is, what it's become, what it should be, where it's going wrong, and why I have stopped watching it since WrestleMania 33. Was it 33 that just happened, or 32?
Yes, 32.
Sorry, yes. I was saying fast forward in
WrestleMania Star. That was
Well, that's it. That's right. Yeah, WrestleMania Star. So apologies for that. I hope that it doesn't put you off too much.
There you go. It, you having your Cornette moment.
I am, and you know what's worrying me is that what I found in the last 6 months is that that I agree more and more with what Cornette said in the past, or at least I not necessarily agree, but I actually have seen what he has been saying more in the past, more and more as we go on, to the point where, you know, I think he can sometimes rant and rave like a loony, and I agree some of the things he says are a little bit out there, and he would not agree with me about Lucha Underground. I know that for a fact.
Yep.
But slowly I'm seeing more and more of the things that he has spoken about in the past, and that worries me, not because, not for me or for him, but it worries me for wrestling in general.
Yeah, I can definitely see where you're coming from there. But we will close it close today. You can follow Ben at Tink Holloway on Twitter, and you can follow me at Sheriff Lone Star, also on Twitter. And thank you very much for listening today. Thank you very much for listening to the Wrestle Talk Podcast Network, which you can find on iTunes, SoundCloud, and all your favorite podcast providers. Please follow us on Wrestle Plus. Come and join us. And we will see you next week. Take care.
Well, that's it then. We've saved people the trouble of voting. What's next?